Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
And Angela, I was teasing about Chicago in January, the ice sculptures on Michigan Avenue. Anybody ever seen those? Absolutely incredible, mind-boggling. All right. Let me adorn you. Is that what you said? Okay. It was sometime after I started coming to this teaching. I started in 1984 at the Woodruff Arts Center. Some of you started there too with Dr. Kennedy Schultz, my teacher, or maybe even it was a couple years after I started, before I realized exactly what it was that appealed to me so much about what I was hearing week after week after week. Now, it wasn't just that it made more sense to me than most of the religious ideas that I'd heard in my life, which it did. And it wasn't just because I had found a place where lots of people actually talked openly about ideas that I had always believed in but didn't know anybody else did, though that was part of it too. But that wasn't the real reason. The most compelling reason that drew me, I'll say here, into this teaching and kept me coming back, because there are a lot of people that are drawn here but they don't keep coming back, was when I realized one day that I was a spiritual pragmatist. All right? Now, in other words, I realized that I had gotten tired of spending time studying religion instead of practicing spirituality. There's a difference. And by that time in my life, I had long ago lost interest in spending my Sunday mornings and my precious reading time during the week learning about rules and dogma and rituals and stories that might be working for other people but didn't do a thing for me. Because for me, none of the old stuff had any positive effect anymore on my relationship with my higher power, with that spiritual something inside of me that I wanted to feel more connected to, that I wanted to understand. I wanted something I could use, something that recognized the interdependence, I love that word, the interdependence between my day-to-day life and the physical, in the physical world, and my moment-to-moment awareness of the spiritual world. I was tired of dealing with my physical circumstances, my emotional issues, my intellectual growth, and my spiritual desires as four separate things, trying to look at all of them in different pieces. It was too much work. I knew that there had to be an easier way. I knew that any spiritual discipline that I decided to put my energy into, if I was going to do it at all, would have to be practical, because I was a spiritual pragmatist. So that means it would have to blend the physical and the spiritual in a way that made both of them stronger and more meaningful for me. And this teaching, the teaching of the science of mind, not to be confused with Scientology or Christian Science if you're here visiting, this teaching is what I found. And by the way, I've mentioned this before, I stopped thinking of this as church a long, long time ago. Instead, I like to think of this as what I call everyday spirituality. Everyday spirituality. That's why over the next four Sundays, I'm going to focus on four spiritual subjects that are extremely practical. Now, there's a lot more than four, but I'm sure over time David and I'll get to the rest of them. But I want to talk about four that I think are extremely important. You see, my primary goal ever since I started speaking on the stage on this subject has always been to try to erase the line between Sunday morning and the rest of the week. I wanted to erase that line. I wanted to talk about using God, which is a term I stole from Dr. Holmes, instead of worshiping God or fearing God, as so many people I knew were doing. I wanted to talk about consciously using the power that we all have as we go about making all of these simple practical decisions that make up all of the different days of our lives. Now, if you think about it, that's the real meaning of the Bible phrase. David has used it in a talk, I think, to pray without ceasing. Those are old-time Bible words, but what they mean are, it means being consciously spiritual while we are being physical. Consciously spiritual while we are living our physical experience. It means recognizing all the time that everything is part of one thing. Everything is just a different aspect of the one thing. It's all God and it's all spiritual. So recognizing and accepting that truth and living it, that's a big part of it, is how we move forward in life. That's how we grow. That's how we evolve. It's how we learn to express our spiritual awareness as we communicate and interact with people in the many different places that we do that, as we do our job every day, as we enjoy our physical body by hugging the people we love and being around and enjoying beautiful sunsets and music. And it's how we go about making the money that gives us the freedom to play and share and make the world a better place. Now, the reason this way of living and being is so practical while still being spiritual is because when we do it, we are using, and Angela's reading was perfect in this, we are using everything that we have on heaven and earth. That's a metaphor, of course, on the spiritual level and the physical level. We are being who we are, which is spiritual beings having a physical form, and doing what we truly love to do, which is expressing life in a way that fulfills us and spreads greater love in the world. So, let's get started. Part one today, the title of this talk is Play to Your Strengths. Play to Your Strengths. And the reason I wanted to talk about this topic first, I looked at a bunch of different ones, is because of the widespread belief in society that a person's ability to succeed in any area of life depends upon what happens around them and what happens to them. A lot of people believe that. It's the belief that people end up living the life they live because of their parents or their environment or because of what other people think about them. Now, those of you who have been coming to this kind of a teaching for a while know that that is not what we teach here. Instead, we believe that there is a universal intelligence acting in the world in, as, and through us, and that intelligence is the only creative power in our life. Fundamentally, that is the core of what we believe. However, in the world at large, you see it in the news every day, far too many people limit their options very early on or even accept defeat in their life, or they stay in unpleasant situations in their life without a whimper, just staying right through it, because they look at the cards that they have been dealt, so to speak, by life, by God, by the system, by whomever they believe dealt them these cards, and they accept without question that trying to do anything with those cards is a lost cause. A lot of people give up early. They don't feel they have any say in what they think is going to be the inevitable outcome, so they give up before they start. So let me ask a question. Are there any poker players in here? Okay, a few? Okay, five or six. A couple hands went way up. That's good. All right. Obviously the winners, okay. Now, I could use bridge, but it's not nearly as colorful, you know, so we'll talk about poker as the example. Any good poker player will tell you that the hands a player is dealt over the course of the evening have very little to do with winning and losing over the long run. Maybe one hand at a time, but over the long run, they don't. Or as the writer Robert Louis Stevenson, Kidnapped, you know, one of those old-time writers, he said, life is not always a matter of holding good cards, but in playing a tough hand well. But I prefer that great metaphysician, Kenny Rogers, who said, what'd he say? You gotta know when to hold them, you gotta know when to fold them. All right. Okay. No, I'm not gonna sing it, but Peter and I'll think about it. So what they're, you know, what I'm saying is the real power is not in the cards and it's not in the rules of the game, it's in the player. The real power is in the player. So that means in life, just like in poker or bridge, whatever it happens to be, there are practical spiritual skills that we can learn and use that will make the final outcome much more favorable. And today I'm going to talk about some of those skills in terms of being practical. Now, it sometimes seems to me, I keep up with the news pretty well, I read BBC News every morning, the New York Times, I try to get a pretty good cross-section, and it seems to me that we live in a very critical and negative society. Sometimes. I like to be optimistic, but you know, the facts are the facts, okay? And that we are a world of whiners, all right? Not you guys, but the people out there, okay? All right. I think that most people would rather complain about problems than work on solutions, right? Okay. We would rather talk about how difficult something is than celebrate how wonderful it could be. That's what we see. I mean, think about the language that we use. We work on relationships. We try to earn or to scratch out a living. We struggle with our weight. There's a good one. We fight for justice. And it always seems to be an uphill battle, or that's the way we like to portray it. And as a result, we spend a lot more time discussing ways to rationalize or to cover up our weaknesses than we do in recognizing and building up our strengths. Now, why do we do this? Doesn't seem smart. Why do we do it? There are lots of reasons. We don't like to take responsibility for our mistakes. That's one. We don't want anyone to think we have any weaknesses. That's another one. We don't want to admit to ourselves that we're vulnerable. That's another reason. All of those. But then again, taking a more positive, constructive viewpoint, it may just be that we want to minimize some aspect of our personality that we feel is getting in the way of our success. Or maybe we want to de-emphasize something that we think is keeping us from living up to our full potential. So where do we go for our reading material to work on all this stuff? To the self-improvement section, okay? Think about it. Now, there's nothing inherently wrong with that kind of thinking. I am a firm believer in self-improvement. And we all have aspects of our personality that could certainly be improved. But we have to be aware of two things that this kind of thinking does to us at the consciousness level. At the consciousness level, which is the level where our physical and our spiritual natures come together, that is the level at which we create our life. First of all, this is the first thing that kind of thinking does. If we spend all of our time worrying about or focusing on our weaknesses, we'll start to think of ourselves as flawed. You know, sort of like when you own an old car and every week something new goes wrong and you end up paying for it, you start thinking about the car that way. Now, I know people, and so do you, when you ask them how things are going, they'll tell you, oh, things are okay right now, I guess, but it's probably not going to last. You know me, I always, you know, that kind of stuff. That's my mom. Every silver lining has a dark cloud, you know, that thing. And as a result, she listens to these talks. She's going to love that. Anyway, as a result, people who think this way miss a lot of wonderful living while they are waiting for the sky to fall. And when it does fall, usually on them, because they're the ones that are creating it in their experience, okay, once it finally does happen, they miss even more good stuff because they're so busy telling everybody they were right, okay? That's one thing focusing on our weaknesses can do. But the second thing this kind of thinking does, which is much more insidious from a spiritual viewpoint, is that it keeps us in a place of fear and limitation and narrow-mindedness instead of a place of passion and creativity and imagination. That's another thing that it does. In other words, it takes this marvelous God-given creative tool that we have been given, this amazing mind that we all share, which is supported by a powerful heart and an unlimited wealth of ideas and opportunities, and it uses these powerful, precious tools to tinker with our petty personality flaws instead of building on our unique strengths. I mean, that's like having a brand new state-of-the-art smartphone, like an iPhone 6 for you guys that are going to race out and buy them when they come out this week, and using it for a doorstop. That's kind of what it's like, okay? Once again, that kind of focus is not necessarily bad. It's just wasteful. It's a waste of what we have. I mean, sure, we need to work on our weaknesses. Of course, we need to strengthen the less admirable aspects of our personality. We need to fix some of our bad habits and correct some of our other not so endearing behaviors. Sure, our foundation needs to be strong. But once we get past a certain level of spiritual functioning and understanding in our day-to-day lives, then we need to put our energy where it counts the most. We need to focus on the things that we do well, the things we do well. Now, I'm sure we've got some sports people here who have heard of a man by the name of John Wooden, not John Madden, John Wooden. Anybody know who he was? UCLA, one of the most famous basketball coaches in history. He used to say, it was a wonderful statement, he said, "Do not let what you cannot do interfere with what you can do." Great statement, very simple. Now, in the metaphysical community, the New Thought Spiritual Community of which we are a part, where people ought to know better, okay? Too many people are wasting valuable energy doing just that. I mean, we're pecking around in the dirt with the chickens when we ought to be flying with the eagles, is one way of saying it. Instead, if we want to make a difference in the world, and that means if we want to live a life for us and for everyone else that is beyond the average and into the extraordinary, anybody want to do that? I certainly want to do that. Beyond the average, into the extraordinary, we need to put more time and energy into building on our greatest talents, and we need to open our heart to our greatest passions. We need to lift our eyes up to the hills from whence our help cometh, that old statement, to that unique higher place where our own individual path is leading us. Because that's what our strengths and our talents really are. They are signposts pointing the way, which is why they deserve our best attention. You see, many human weaknesses are greatly overrated. They're very titillating. We like to write about them and talk about them. We've seen that throughout history. You can see it on the daily news. Every talented human being who has changed the world, and I'm talking at the level of Mother Teresa, Mahatma Gandhi, Dr. King, every person who has changed the world for the better has had weaknesses. Weaknesses. It's part of the human condition. It's part of our charm as human beings, all right? And some of these people have been the subject of stories and biographies that criticize them for their flaws. They focus on that. Look at some of the biographies of Dr. King and Gandhi and some of the others. Now, in some cases, not all, where the weaknesses were thought to be character weaknesses, were so judgmental, great minds gave in to those weaknesses and it eventually destroyed them. Destroyed them. Think Hemingway and alcohol. All the fabulously talented musicians that we lost to drugs, even recently, Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, all of them. Great political leaders whose reputations were destroyed by bribery or sex scandals. You read about those every day. On the other hand, there were those who had extreme physical weaknesses that they managed to overcome. Beethoven's loss of hearing is one. Stephen Hawking, the physicist, in his wheelchair. Helen Keller, both deaf and blind from a very early age. But while they lived, however they played with the cards that life dealt them, all of these people did wondrous things. That's the perfect word. They did wondrous things. They created great works of art and music. They inspired hope. They improved countless lives. And in some cases, they changed the course of history. Now, I want you to notice they were not held back by their weaknesses. They went forward in spite of them, because they knew their strengths and they acted upon those. Now, let's get a little more personal, okay? If I asked you, each of you, right now, what are your greatest strengths? I put an S in the end, plural, okay? Do you have any idea what you would say? How many people know exactly what they'd say, the strengths? Or let's put it this way. Let's say if I gave you 30 seconds to write a list of your 10 greatest strengths. Think you could do that? We're not going to do it, but just think about it, okay? Now, let me tell you a secret. If you stopped thinking in human terms and started thinking spiritually from an inner awareness of your own divine nature, you could write for a lot longer than 30 seconds and you could list a lot more things than 10. But there's something inside of us that has trouble doing that. It's uncomfortable because it seems so arrogant to talk about that. There is something noble, we have been taught, about denying our strengths and confessing our weaknesses publicly and showing how we're working on them even as we struggle and suffer through them. That's part of the common dialogue we have as human beings. But I'm going to tell you something, and this is one of the first things I learned in this teaching. There is nothing noble about minimizing ourselves or any aspect of ourselves ever. Ever, ever, ever. It doesn't do anything for us, and it certainly doesn't impress God. That's why Dr. Barker used to say, my teacher's teacher, always speak well of yourself. It is never socially acceptable, but it is always spiritually correct. Great statement. Well, I'm going to go even farther than that because that's what students are supposed to do, go beyond their teachers. I'm going to go farther than speaking well of ourselves. We should also make a conscious effort to think well of ourselves, because that's where it starts. Now, does that mean we don't admit our mistakes? No. Does it mean we don't recognize that we have weaknesses and limitations? No, it doesn't mean that either. It simply means that only when we have a proper perspective about our weaknesses will we be able to go beyond them. In fact, when we stop judging ourselves or our circumstances as being either good or bad, and we start looking at the conditions of our life through God's eyes, that's a beautiful metaphor, but I like it, we may find that what we thought were our weaknesses are actually hiding our greatest strengths, which is a beautiful thing to find. There's a story I read some years ago. I love it. It was in the book called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. Some of you may remember that out a while back. Dan Millman was his name. And it was a story about a 10-year-old boy who was in a terrible automobile accident. He survived, but he lost his left arm right above the elbow. So his parents, wanting to do something for him once he recovered for his self-esteem, because you know how devastating that could be, especially to a child, they enrolled him in a judo school, a jiu-jitsu school, martial arts, with an old Japanese teacher. Think Pat Morita and the Karate Kid, that kind of thing, okay? And after 3 months of working with this teacher, this boy had only learned one move, okay? It was a very complicated, very difficult move, but only one. And when he asked his teacher about it, the teacher said, "It's the only move you will ever need to know." And he left it there. So a few months later, the boy went into his first tournament, and in his first 3 matches, he used this one move, and he won all 3. Right like that. He was starting to think, boy, there's something going on here. But in the final match, he faced a boy who was stronger, faster, much more experienced. But shortly after the match started, his opponent made a critical mistake, left him an opening. The boys used this one move, immediately pinned him, and he won the match. So a little later, he's talking to his teacher, and the man said, "You won for 2 reasons. First of all, you have mastered one of the most difficult moves in judo. And second, the only known defense for that move is for your opponent to grab your left arm." Isn't that fun? Supposedly a true story. So his apparent visible weakness had become his greatest strength. His greatest strength. Wherever we happen to be in our life, in our workplace, with our family, on the street, wherever it is, whatever our state of mind or the state of our emotions, we need to realize that we are the right person in the right place at the right time. Otherwise, Spirit would not be showing up there as us. That's what we have to know. Each one of us provides some unique strength, some special talent, some particular ability which is present for one reason and one reason only, and that is to allow more of life to show up in the world by doing something only we can do. Only we can do. Now, some of you former Bible thumpers, excuse me, Bible students, may recall a story in the Bible about the talents. Remember that? Anybody remember that? Church, the talents. Quick reminder, 3 servants are given different amounts of money by the master. He gives the first servant 5 talents, dollars, euros, whatever you want to call them, 5 talents, we'll say. The second one gets 3, third one gets 1. Starting to ring a bell here? Okay, got all that. So he gave them the money, and he went out on a trip. And when he came back, the first 2 servants had invested their money and had doubled it. And the master was very pleased. But the third servant was afraid that he was going to lose the talent. So he hid it away in a secret place. And when the master came home, he said, "Here it is." And the master was not pleased at all. As a matter of fact, he took that talent and he gave it to the guy who now had 10. So he had 11 and this guy had none. Now, the first time I saw this story, it didn't seem fair. But the simple message of this story is that we are meant to use what is given to us, not to hide it away. So the popular phrase, "use it or lose it," is a spiritual principle. It really, really is. But there's an even stronger quote that I love. It can be found in the Gospel of Thomas, which is one of the later Gospels found in Egypt in the 1940s. And it's a list. The Gospel of Thomas is a list of 132 or 137 statements attributed to the Master teacher, Jesus. And this is the statement. When I read it, I loved it. It says, if you release what is within you, what you release will save you. If you do not release what is within you, what you do not release will destroy you. Now that sounds like a Jesus I could listen to, you know, that kind of thing. Somebody who is straight there. If you release what is within you, what you release will save you. If you do not release what is within you, what you do not release will destroy you. Now that may sound harsh, but spiritually it makes perfect sense, especially when we're talking about our own unique strengths and our own individual talents. I believe one of the main purposes of this lifetime is first to discover those strengths so we know what we have to work with, and then once we do that, we need to develop those strengths, to practice them, to experiment with them, and to play with them, and to play. We need to take the raw material, the undifferentiated consciousness, as Dr. Holmes calls it, and claim it as our own. You see, having a talent is worthless if we don't recognize it and develop it. Just like having a great fortune doesn't do us any good if all we do is stuff it in a mattress. Does this mean we're going to be the very best in the world at what we do? Maybe. Maybe not. Probably not. There's a lot of people in the world. But does it mean that we will be the best in our life at something that we love to do? Now we're getting somewhere, because that's actually not too shabby. Or another way of saying it is, we need to stop worrying so much about what we can't do and start doing the things we can do in the way that only we can do them. In the way, that's what brings this home. Now, let's talk about tools here briefly. The key, how do you find what your strengths are? Great question. That's why we're having this talk. The key to discovering our own special niche in life is self-reflection, which leads to self-awareness. Self-reflection leading to self-awareness. Especially in teachings like this one, we need to stop focusing on finding our one spiritual path. It makes me crazy when somebody says, I wonder what spirit wants me to do. Okay? It's not one spiritual path. Looking for one path holds us back. We don't have just one path. We don't have just one strength or one opportunity to succeed. We don't have just one. Every path is spiritual because God is all there is. Because God is all there is. So in searching for our strengths, we don't need to be looking for perfection. We just need to seek out a career or a relationship or a way of being, whatever we're looking for, that feels better and more powerful in us than what we're doing now. Something that challenges us, something that feeds our soul, something that makes us feel joyful and passionate whenever we're doing it, whenever we are even thinking about it. That's what we need to find. Another tool, if we aren't sure what our greatest strengths are, ask some people we know and trust, because sometimes they can see things that we've been afraid to look at. We can also think about what things we enjoy, what are our hobbies, all those things. Or another question, a good tool, is what would we be doing if we were independently wealthy? You know that question, if you had all the money you would ever need, what would you be doing it? And then the next statement is, start doing it, okay? As we learn to follow our passions, our strengths become more and more conspicuous, and that gives us the power to overcome any obstacles that get in our way. Finally, and this is a part of the self-reflection, we need to spend regular time in prayer and meditation. There is no getting away from that if you want to move forward spiritually. Okay? Not trying to fix ourselves or fix our life, but opening our mind and our heart to the intelligence that surrounds us and fills us. Now, that may seem like a strictly spiritual tool, but I assure you it is extremely practical. You've probably heard the phrase, prayer is when we talk to God and meditation is when we listen to God. If you haven't heard it, you have now, okay? It's true, but we don't have to be sitting cross-legged in a room, smelling incense and listening to music to listen to God. We don't. That inner voice rings out loud and clear whenever we feel that we are contributing value to the world while doing something we love. That's when we feel like we're in perfect harmony with our spiritual nature and our physical life starts to take on an aura of spirituality. That's when it happens. When we learn to play to our strengths while consciously letting our heart be open and allowing our imagination to run rampant, to flow freely, that's when we know we're in the headed in the right direction. And fortunately, it doesn't need to be complicated or difficult, which is why next week I'm going to talk about the power in simplicity. The power in simplicity. I hope to see you then, because all this stuff is the truth in your life, and it is the truth in mine, and so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's take a moment. As Angela says, take a breath or two. Roll your shoulders a little, relax. Take the ideas that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's know this. I myself am not powerful, but as spirit, I am all the power I need. I recognize that the universe itself is not powerful. It is the power of spirit expressing itself in an infinite variety of ways. And as I allow myself to express that power in, as, and through me, I become the creative power in my life. Or rather than becoming that creative power, I recognize that that is what I have always been. So as I allow myself to be in the world, not struggling against anything, fighting against anyone, or trying to prove that I have a right to be here, and I simply be, I simply focus on what I love, whom I love, going to the places that I love, living my life filled with love, that love expands. And it expands not as a vague emotion, it expands as a powerful force that allows me to embrace more and more of this incredible world, this physical world that surrounds me. I recognize that what I see as a physical world is simply the outer expression of an invisible law. It is spirit taking form, and that form is fluid. As I look outside and I see things, the circumstances of the world, the circumstances of my life, I recognize that through my thoughts, as they affect my actions, and through the thoughts of others as we join together thinking better ideas about what we see, we are able to heal anything. We are able to heal illness. We are able to heal poverty. We are able to heal racial injustice. We are able to heal homophobia. We are able to heal all of these things, poverty, war, simply by knowing something better and acting on it. And recognizing that every person everywhere shares this one spirit with you, with me, with all of us. As I begin to recognize this, I give no more power to the world. I give no more power to the fears of the world, to the limitations of the world, to the misunderstandings or prejudice of the world. I do not fight them. I do not ignore them. I simply give them no thought. I think higher and deeper and stronger, and recognize that this begins to change everything. With gratitude for this awareness and a simple understanding of the sacred significance of these ideas, I embrace them and I release them into consciousness, knowing that this is the truth for me here and now and for all time. Please join me in saying, and so it is.